Hey, today's great guest is Tom Ziegler, and he is a motivational speaker, and he's helped a whole lot of people really scale and get the best out of themselves. His whole tagline, I think, is success, significance, and legacy. And certainly he's got that from his very famous dad, Zig Ziegler. So first off, Tom, welcome to the show.
Mark, thanks for having me.
So you've been doing this a long time, and I think for the listener, I think we first need to set up kind of the legacy as you will. Certainly you've learned a lot from your dad. Let's start off with your dad and talk about him for a few minutes. Zig Ziglar, very famous name in the motivational speaking business. How did he become who he became? Very significant in the way that he really helped, motivate people and help people advance in their life.
Yeah, so there's a couple of kind of pivot points in his life. The first one is when he was young and in sales, and he wasn't doing good. 2.5 years, he didn't really sell anything, and he went to a company meeting, and his hero was there, PC Merrill. He was a leader in the company, and at a break, PC Merrill brought him to the side, put his hands on his shoulders, and looked my dad in the eye and said, "Zig, in all my years, I've never seen such a waste. But if you believed in yourself and went to work on a regular schedule, you could be a champion." And so that "but" kind of negated everything before it, which is positive in this case. And that was the day dad decided to figure out what it meant to believe in yourself, and that was the day he decided to go to work on a regular schedule. And so he dedicated his life to that. What does belief really mean, and how do you build that in yourself? And he started knocking on doors every day at 9 a.m. He was in direct sales, and that year he finished number two out of 7,000 salespeople, when in the previous 2.5 years he'd never been in the top 5,000. And so that's what really started his trajectory. He became kind of an industry leader. He got recruited all the time. He had a bunch of ups and downs and starts. But that was really it. And when you set the pace as a sales professional, they then start asking you to train and develop other people. So that's how he kind of stepped into speaking and training. And when he first started, it was all technical because he thought that was what people wanted. And then he realized, no. Technical is important, but it's not the most important thing. It's really more to do with attitude and character and integrity and belief and mindset. Because if you don't have that, you can have all the skills in the world, and it just won't take you to that top level. So that's kind of his path. When I was speaking a little while back, somebody asked a question. They said, "What was the one thing that made Zig Ziglar who we know him for? Like, what was his one practice, his one habit?" And so this was the answer I gave, and I still think it's the best answer. For almost 40 years, Dad woke up early, and he spent the first 2 to 3 hours reading, researching God's word, books of inspiration, motivation, all different things, so that he would internalize it and personalize it, so that he could share it with someone else for their benefit. And that last statement is really the key, because when you try to understand the problems that people have, and you first seek to help them solve those problems, and your motive is for them to win, and you have a daily habit or practice of learning something new to benefit someone else, it changes you as a person. And so that simple practice is really like, if somebody says, "Well, what do I do to have that kind of a legacy?" That's what you do. You don't have to do it 2 or 3 hours every day like Dad did, but just imagine if 5 minutes a day you started off that way. How different would you be at the end of a year, and how many people will you have impacted by the end of the year if you do that?
Well, actually, that's exactly what I do every day. I get up, oh, dark 30, and I'm out, in the mountains. I live in Sun Valley, Idaho. And I just am in such a believer of that, of putting positive messaging into your brain. And that just tees up. It's garbage in, garbage out, and positive stuff in, positive stuff out. And if you are walking around with negative weight on your back, it is very difficult to fly high and be the best version of yourself. And we're not necessarily talking about everybody becoming a motivational speaker and affecting people in that way, because many people are doctors and lawyers and other professions that are out there. But every person that you come in contact with, you can influence in some way, and just you can just tell when somebody just has that great positive energy and that spirit when they come at you. I want to talk, go back to what you said a minute ago. So your dad said, or he was told by this other person that was higher up in the organization, who said, I can, I, you're such a waste, but, and then he goes on to that. And then you went into this whole thing about belief. There has to be the system in place, right? And maybe part of that system was he's going to start to dedicate 2 to 3 hours each morning of reading positive messaging, learning, trying to uncover the secrets of every, because we all know that success leaves clues. And so when you really study those of others, I really try to do that. They really help you navigate the path forward, so you're not wandering around in the dark. But did he have a system that, because my system I get back to is I've got this whole pyramid of success. And I learned that a long time ago from John Wooden. And so there's got 25 different things that are within there. And that is my particular system. And that's really helped me. But did your dad have any kind of system in place that beyond belief, that if he did these five different things, he was really going to elevate to the next level?
Yeah, and I think when he first heard that statement, if you believed in yourself, that's when he started studying Norman Vincent Peale and Dale Carnegie and some of the real iconic founders of the personal development industry. And out of that, the system I believe that he created, it's in our Ziglar goal setting system. And in our, we call it the wheel of life. And there's seven areas in the wheel of life: the mental, the spiritual, the physical, the family, the financial, the personal, and the career. And so he became very intentional about developing each of those seven areas of life. And so there's principles that fall under each one of those. But in order to have balanced success, I mean, if you achieve great career success, but you lose your health, that's not really balanced success, right? And if you have good physical health but lose your family relationships, that's not really success either. So it's that balance that you've got to have. And so he followed that, and the habits that he really honed in on was getting very intentional about what he wanted to become. Dad kind of coined the phrase, the be do have philosophy. You got to be the right person first and then do the right things before you can have all that life has to offer. And our world today is all about the have and the do. I mean, if you introduce yourself to somebody and they say, well, who are, tell me about yourself. You tell them what you do, or you might tell them you belong to the club, or, it's all of, but it's not who you are as a person. That very seldom do we speak of our character or our beliefs. And so you got to be the right person first. And you kind of started off this episode with that tagline, success, significance, and legacy. And so, and I want to take you on a little perspective there. Let's say that you make a decision, hey, I'm going to get up at dark 30 every day, and I'm going to put the good, the clean, the pure, the powerful, and the positive into my life. I'm going to read, I'm going to listen, I'm going to pray, whatever that is. You will become successful. But what, here's an interesting thing. If your motive shifts a little bit, then you move from success to significance. So significance, our definition is it's helping someone else be, do, or have more than they thought possible. So if you use that time to develop yourself so you can go and make more income or whatever your goals are, that's fantastic. But if you go to that next level and say, you know what, I'm going to go speak somewhere, or I'm leading a business, I've got to learn this so I can pour into my people to help them develop. That's really significance. And then legacy is even one step higher. And that's when you suddenly become committed to not only helping people, other people become successful, but you teach them how to teach others. And so you talked about your system. You know, it's great if you use that system for your own success. It's great if somebody comes to your event and they learn it and their life improves. But man, it's off the charts when they take your system and teach it to somebody else.
Yeah,
That's
I love that.
legacy, right? So that's when we get excited at Ziglar, is we try to take all these principles, all these ideas, and make it simple to understand. You still got to do it, right? I mean, still work, still discipline, but then we take it to that next level and try to equip you to go out and teach others to do the same.
Yeah, I think too when you go through the things that you talked about ending with legacy, you know that there's such a self-fulfilling satisfaction, gratification that you're in some way helping somebody else, and there's nothing more to me significant than when you know that somebody's come out to you and go, you know, I just want you to know you've changed my life in some positive way, which you may at the time never thought that. That was what was going on, but they had different challenges. And the thing is, what we all have challenged. Another thing that you said before about trying to, you know, weigh your seven different pillars that you guys have at Ziglar, which is everybody wants a balanced life, but it seems like we're all get unbalanced because things happen that are unforeseen. You know, you get stuck in a traffic jam, it makes you late for work, which makes you rush, which makes you late to getting home to the kids, you know, all these different things. And so it seems like if you can consciously be aware of all these things that you were just talking about, that you will be out of balance. But I think if you're consciously waking up every day and how to reset that day, it's going to allow you to be much more balanced in your day-to-day life and make you feel like you're much more in control and everything around that. Okay, let's talk about you. So now you have a very famous dad. He starts the Ziglar Corporation. He's a motivational speaker. He's creating a legacy, and you're growing up within this system. Did you ever feel any pressure of trying to live up to your dad's expectations, whatever those might have been? Or was he such a comforting father that he made you feel really empowered and involved in what he was really trying to create?
So the answer to that is both. The reality is he never put pressure on me to do a certain thing. He never said, you know, become a speaker or lead this company or be a sales professional. He never said that. He basically just told me one thing. He said, "Son, whatever you want to do, as long as you do it with 100% integrity and 100% effort, I'll support you," right? So that was the freedom. And so he gave me that. However, I self-imposed a lie into the way I was thinking. And the easiest, clearest example is that is when I started speaking, man, my stomach would be in knots and I would be all uptight and I'd go out there and speak and I had fun speaking. The actual speaking part was fun. And when I got done, people seemed to like it. But man, it was like weeks of agony getting ready for it. And after doing that a dozen times, I basically came home and I sat myself in a corner. And I said to myself, why do I feel this way? Like, you know, what is it that's causing the stomach to knot up and all that stuff? And I realized I'd told myself a lie. And the lie was I had told myself that the audience wanted me to be like my dad. And that's not true. The audience does not want me to be like my dad. What they want me to be is to have the same principles and values, right? That's what they want. But they also want me to be the best me, you know, there's no way anybody in the world can copy and do Zig Ziglar style. I mean, he was one of a kind, maybe the greatest to ever walk the stage. And so once I got that in my head, okay, that's true. That then gave me the freedom to be, because I'm kind of a nerd. I've got a dry sense of humor. I talk slower. I I tell stories. I integrate a lot of stuff. I like to talk back and forth with the audience. I like to have conversations ongoing. That's a totally different style, and it's who I am. It's the way God created me. And so once I got comfortable with that, no more of that anxiety, worry, or whatever. I just got back from Vietnam doing some presentations over there on a little tour. And the culture is completely different. The people are amazing. It's a communist Buddhist country. And they loved it. I mean, it was just like family. It was the same wavelength as far as values and virtues. If I was worried about how they would receive me, it would have been horrible because the feedback you get from a room in that culture is completely different than the feedback you get from here. One is not right and wrong, and one's not wrong. It's just different. So one of the things that you have to do is to know who you are, whose you are, and how you present. You engage the audience, and you just watch people's eyes. Because whether somebody's laughing out loud and demonstrative and raising their hand, that's a very American response to an engaging room. There, it's like this very intense, quiet, a lot of note-taking, and not so many questions, right? Because it's the culturally they want to be respectful. Totally different view. But if I'm there thinking I have to be Zig Ziglar, oh my gosh, it would have been trauma. But if I'm there just to serve the people in the room and to ask the deeper question one-on-one, man, it's like a home run. So I hope that answers, but I had a big internal hurdle to overcome because it was a self-imposed lie that I had told myself.
Yeah, there's a couple things there. So I played in the NFL, and I have two daughters, and it was really important as they were coming up through their sports careers. They're now in their later 20s, but I didn't want them to feel any pressure that they had to follow my path in any way. And so, as a dad who had kind of been out there and done that, it was important. And I think, mission accomplished. And sometimes it wasn't always perfect, but I really tried to stay out of coaching them versus just say, you did a great job every single time they came off, and how can I help you? Right? Versus telling them what to do and how to do it. The other thing that you brought up was public speaking. And I just want to make a quick comment on that because I found this about myself. And I think a lot of people have the fear of getting in front of people. I love it, but I didn't always love it because I was so concerned about what I thought other people thought of me when I was up there, kind of like what you're saying. And people in the audience are just waiting just to receive information. And all you're delivering that info. And so I think the more that you can just focus on the audience is just looking for you to communicate something, and all you got to do is deliver that, and everything else will take care of itself. And it sounds like over time you kind of got through that, you got over that, and then you really developed skill. And I love hearing about the Vietnam. I'd love to speak in Vietnam someday. It sounds like it was a blast, and maybe what you were talking about is they're very subdued. I don't know if they are. I have been around a lot of, especially in Nepal, climbing Mount Everest, a very Buddhist country. When I'm down in Tanzania, same type of thing. And I don't know if those two audience, but people in the US can get pretty amped up versus I would assume what you're saying is other places in the world, they're more subdued, but the message is still the same and they're receiving it in the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think subdued is a good word, and it's because there's just such a built-in respect, and also hierarchy. They want to make sure that they know they want you to know that they're paying attention, they care, they're not being assumptive, or trying to stand out. They're really just trying to take it in and learn from it. And so that's really great. The whole, gosh, the whole speaking and having fun, for me, what really is a good indicator is the more anxious and worried or uptight you are about a presentation, to me, it really has to do with selfishness because you're putting pressure to get a result that you want. Like you want to look good, you want the applause, you want the host to say, "Wow, they did a great job," right? And it's really natural. But as soon as you flip that and say, "You know what? I'm just here for the people in the room. I'm going to get there a little early. I'm going to talk to people. I'm going to meet, I maybe have a Zoom call before I go with people who are going to be in the audience and see if I can learn what their big challenges are." And when your whole focus changes to the people in the room and what you can do for them, then you take that focus off of self, and that anxiety and that worry and that fear and all those things just kind of disappear. And it's just a powerful thing. It's in sports, it's playing loose, right? If you have to make the catch, because what will people think if you don't? Man, you're playing tight. You're not going to have the reach to catch that ball, right? But if you're out there just, man, the practices were awesome and I'm set up and I'm just going to give it my all and whatever happens, happens. You're playing loose, right? And your body can adjust and do things you didn't think was possible just because you're just focused on playing. And that's what it's really about. So one of them is a selfish, I've got to get a result. And the other one is, hey, I just need to serve the people who are out here with me, right?
Yeah. No, all great stuff. Okay, so let's shift just a little bit and let's talk about you are running the Zig Ziglar Corporation. Let's talk about what that is, because you guys are doing some really cool stuff.
Yeah, so gosh, Dad founded the company over 50 years ago. I tell when people say, "How long have you been in the business?" I say 60 years, because I was born into it, right? It's just I didn't know what it was until really college. I started work there right after college, so I'll be there almost 40 years now, and so. Through the years, all kinds of personal development, sales, success, coaching, team development, leadership, all kinds of training. Today, we really do three things as our primary focus. We certify coaches in our material, we certify speakers and trainers in our material, and we do a lot of leadership training and development. So with corporations, with executive coaches, with leaders, and kind of our stake there is we really focus in on coaching leaders how to coach their people. Most people, traditional leadership models are very top-down, kind of command and control, do it because I said so. And then there's servant leadership, which is fantastic. You're serving the people. One of Dad's quotes is, "You don't build a business, you build people, and people build the business." But coaching, so we call it coach leadership. There is a real system to that, and we teach a five-step process. But if you ask most people, would you rather be told what to do or asked what to do? Like 98% say asked, right? So what does a coach do? A coach, through great questions, asks their people, "How are we going to get this done?" And then nudges them to make, it's not that we're going to go do something that's crazy that somebody who's been there for 3 weeks wants to do when we've got 30 years of experience, right? That's not what we're talking about. But if I ask you, what does success look like to you? Why is that important? What are the performance opportunities to improve? How are you going to develop yourself? If I start asking you those questions, at the end of it, we come out with a plan. But it's a plan you've created. And you've got owner. When you create something, you got ownership in it. And when you have ownership in something, you're far more likely to follow through with it. And so, in the coach leadership approach that we do, we're really teaching people to take ownership of their role. And then to create the future that they want. And we do that in alignment with the company's goals and mission, along with their personal goals. So it's a powerful, powerful concept. But that's the main things that we do now, those three things.
Yeah, I've for the last 20 years I've been working in media companies, major media companies, and this is one of the things I've seen, not just in the companies I've been associated with, but just in general, is just that there's such a lack of leadership around communication, expectations, like you said, kind of a force, my will, pushing down, and then not a whole lot of accountability, going back up. And so the more that we can get leaders, so leaders, if you're out there listening to this, reach out to Tom. We'll talk about his contact in a few minutes, but it's just so important to have that. You can go so much further when everybody's rowing in the same direction. But one of the other things that you said too, which is really interesting, which is I think a lot of people get lost in, is this ability to listen. And that uncovers so many clues about what the problem is and how they're going to try to overcome what that is versus just blowing in and just bulldozing over what you want to do. More sales, more this, more that, without really putting thought into the how is that going to be executed. And then also having the employees feel empowered too, like they're accepted. They will go so much further for you if they feel part of that organization. And that's a lot of times is missing in what I've seen, in my personal experience, that's out there. So I can just imagine a lot of the corporations that you guys have led and coached, you really have, just uncovered a whole lot of things and symptoms. And at the end of the day, it's probably similar problems from this company to that company.
Yeah, absolutely. Pretty much the problems are all the same. They all have the same challenges. It really boils down to relationships. Companies that have great internal relationships and a great culture, they win. Companies that have not so good relationships and a culture that doesn't really allow that, they struggle. I mean, it's just the rules of the road. In our coaching process, you mentioned the word listening, but listen to these questions. And then imagine you're the leader asking a direct report this. So you ask your direct report, what does success mean to you? Well, if you talk to five direct reports, you're going to get five different answers, right? And some of them will look at you like that was a, you're an alien. Like, you really want to know what success means to me? Yeah, I do. And so there's like 100 questions that follow it. So like in your job role or it by the end of 2026, what does success mean to you? And they start telling you, you might say, would you like to be eligible for a promotion? Do you want to make more money? These are all kind of in that category of what does success mean to you? But they might come back and say, well, I want to have a little more flexibility in my schedule. I want, there's all kinds of things they could say. But the listening is the key. So they tell you those things, and then you follow it up with a quick why. Why is that important? Well, now we're really getting deep because most people aren't going to share their why with you. If you walk into somebody's office and say, hey, you've been here for 2 years, we've never really had a heart to heart. Why do you work here? They're going to like stare you out of the room, right? I mean, that's an uncomfortable question. It doesn't make sense. But if we've just spent a couple of weeks talking about what does success look like, and we finally get that kind of narrowed down, and you say, well, that's awesome. Why is that important to you? Well, suddenly they're going to tell you more about their why. And as a leader, if I know somebody's why, as a leader, if I help them get their why, man, I've got an ally for life, right? And so you say, hey, you know what? I like your definition of success and why you want it. Would you like some help getting there? Could we create a plan together? Well, man, that sounds good because now we're on the same team. And then you ask another question. So, what attitude could you demonstrate that would allow you to be more effective here? And then you just shut up. And the reason you're asking that question, the reason you're being quiet is because what they say and what they don't say tell you a lot. I'm listening for what they don't say, right? Because what they don't say about what attitude or what effort or what skill could you demonstrate tells you how knowledgeable they are, how aware they are. Like some people are so unaware. I mean, it's obvious to the whole team, except for that individual, this is their blind spot. But when you ask them, well, what do you think you should develop? And they either they reconfirmed that blind spot. Now you've got a great teaching opportunity, but it had to be set up foundationally with the belief that you're there to help them win. And so then you can go into it and then you just create the plan. So that listening thing that you said is absolutely the key. And a lot of times I've seen leaders, we call it competitive listening. So, it's like, well, I'll just give a football analogy. Yeah, we were playing and it was, 27 degrees out there. And, I went over the middle and caught this pass and blah, blah, blah. And another person says, oh, yeah, well, I played in a game and it was three below and it was sleeting. it's like most listening is we're listening to gather information so we can top them. When really listening should be what's underneath the surface, like what's driving that? Because when we know what's under the surface and we're tapping into their why and they believe we're there to help them get it, that changes the game.
That takes into something that I have really found, and in particular, like with these podcasts I've been doing, I'm now on 280 plus, so I've done quite a few of them. And the power of curiosity will continue to look and look and dig and dig and dig and uncover and uncover to ultimately find some answers of where you're trying to go. So you can actually help somebody, quadruple where they're at and leapfrog, any of these little stick points that they seem to be at. All right. Where can people find you? The stuff that's been coming out of your mouth is absolute gold, and I think that we all need it. And I'm so happy for you that you had such a great mentor, to really guide you, and now you've taken that and blossomed that. The difference between your dad is that everything was more hand-to-hand combat back in the day, and now with social media and these other levers, the digital presence, you can reach so many more people at so much more scale. So that's been great. Where can people find what you do and how you do it?
Yeah, so there's two places really. Ziglar.com is our website, and you can reach out to us there. When I do a podcast, I always give my email address, tziglar@ziglar.com, because I do look at my email and respond. So if something on here like piqued your interest and you want to know more, just reach out to me directly. If you are a coach or a speaker and the Ziglar philosophy resonates with you, would love to help and talk to you more. And in leadership, we're really doing some cool things, taking the best of our leadership programs and then combining it with the core corporate values that a company might already have and integrating those two. So you get a world-class program based on 60 years of proven legacy, but you also embed in it the values and the culture that you've created. So hard, right? And then you lay that on top of a coaching foundation, teaching leaders how to coach their people, and it's a way to dramatically supercharge what you've already built to get results. And ultimately, in the future, that's the difference. I mean, with AI and all the change and disruption that's coming, how we develop our internal leaders is going to be the thing that really separates us from everybody else. So that's where we're putting all our energy and love to talk to you about those things.
Love it. Love it. All right, buddy. Well, listen, I really appreciate you coming on, finding your summit, and check out Tom. He's doing great stuff in the world, and we need more difference makers like Tom. So, again, Tom, I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks, Mark.
All right. Thanks, buddy.